Hello again. It's Friday, and that means another edition of the Zogby Report, Real and Unscripted. I'm John Zogby, and I'm here again with my son and partner, Jeremy Zogby. Hi, Jer.
Hey, Dad. What's on your mind?
Oh, let's see. There's so much going on, but let's start with the politics or broader issues that have political implications. These have not been stellar weeks for President Trump. You know, in our business, we rely on numbers, and the numbers are not good. So his job approval ratings average at 41, but that means that in addition to some 43s and 44s, he's mixing in some 38 and 39 job approval numbers, which are not a good sign for a president in an election year. Remember, he won with 46% of the vote, so he's underperforming right now. In addition to that, in terms of underperforming, despite all that's being said and criticized about Joe Biden and Joe Biden not being in the public eye so much because of coronavirus, the fact is that national polls have Biden leading at an average of 9 points. And that lead is actually getting a little wider as we sit. Some of these national polls have Biden up by as much as 13 or 14, including our very own poll. On top of that, Biden is leading in really almost all of the battleground states, and depending on the poll, all battleground states. And that includes not only that north central corner of Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, but Pennsylvania as well, New Hampshire, which is a swing state. Biden ahead by 3 in North Carolina, 5 or 6 in Florida, and even competitive in Texas, leading in Arizona. Just painting the map, right now it's all Biden all the time. Compounding that is the president's behavior. When you look at the president at, 41%, that means he's down to his base. That 41%, by and large, is not going to leave him, although in some polls it's starting to be chipped away at. But there's no scenario where he wins at 41% support, as well as there's no scenario whatsoever that shows what he's doing now, that is Donald Trump, being able to appeal to groups that he needs to win. He still is in a deficit with voters over 65, in a deficit among white women, among white Catholics. These are groups that he absolutely needs to rebuild in his coalition, and no sign of it. And if his behavior continues, his aides are seriously worried about him winning re-election. Meanwhile, Biden, I can't say is riding it out. He's making strong speeches almost daily now, although very few really public appearances. But at this point in time, if the election were held today, it would be a landslide for Biden and perhaps for the Democratic Party across the country. But as we caution all the time, there is months more of this to go. What strikes you?
Well, we talked about the last couple of weeks, few weeks, that we don't see how Trump comes back. And while I still think that that is a sound judgment, I've been thinking, well, what could he do? What could work in his favor? And upon reflecting on it pretty intensely, the reality is, just like in 2016, and you alluded to this, Trump really only needs to win a few key swing states, maybe a handful, of key swing states. And what could potentially work to his advantage, although on the one hand, the prospect for a second wave is like an Achilles heel for Trump. Interestingly, intriguingly enough, it also could be something that works in his favor. And I say that because we go back to the 90s with President Clinton. It's the economy, stupid. And here we are in 2020, and there's an interesting twist on that, a redux of it's the economy, stupid. Now, what do I mean by that? Not because the economy is booming, certainly not. Not because the economy is doing even remotely good, but because Trump could make the argument as the second wave hits, which looks like it's upon us, and the prospect for more business closures or business closures a second time are really just around the corner. Trump could say to his base that I tried to reopen the economy. I tried to keep things going so that people could make a living. You know, you look at a statistic, a very shocking statistic from Yelp, that 53% of restaurants will not reopen. So while on the one hand, you could make the case that that could cost the election for Trump, it could also help Trump because right along, he's been making the case, do not shut down the economy. People need to make a living.
That's a very good point. And his reelection hinges on really two things. One is public perception of the economy growing. And note that I say public perception of the economy rebounding and growing. I'll explain that. And the other is a complete and total collapse by Joe Biden as a candidate. To be sure, Trump is going to work very hard on the latter. He's already begun to do that. But the perception of the economy, I recall, you know, after the huge and heroic victory of Operation Desert Storm in 1991, President George H.W. Bush moved into January of 1992 with 90% approval ratings, almost unbeatable, so much so that it was very hard to find big name Democrats who were willing to run against Bush. It was assumed he was going to win. But shortly thereafter, by the spring, the economy had tanked badly, and Bush's popularity numbers went from 90 down to 38 or 39. Incidentally, that turned out to be the exact percentage of votes that he got in November of 92. But what I'm getting at is that by the fall of 1992, the economy was in recovery, and new jobs were being created. People were back to work. Unemployment was down. But the perception on the part of the public was that we were still in a deep recession. And it was that perception that led Bush, George H.W. Bush, to his defeat against Bill Clinton and, of course, Ross Perot. And so that's one of the things we have to pay very close attention to. Yes, 4.8 million new jobs were created during the last month. Yes, insofar as this is the number that we always use, the official unemployment rate has gone from 14.8, I believe, you know, down to 11%. But what I'm not seeing yet is a perception that things are getting better. In fact, a Gallup poll that came out just this week showed that for the first time, 3 out of 4, 75%, believe the country is headed in the wrong direction. That's a pretty powerful number. That means that includes a significant number of Republicans in the mix, as well as Democrats and independents. But that's today.
And of course, the key word that you pointed out is perception. Yep. Earlier. You pointed that out. And I think to get to the heart of it is the perception of the voters. Who is to blame? Let's assume that the economy is not going to turn around. I have no reason to believe that it will, even with those official numbers. And as we discussed in a previous episode, that, I mean, the rule of thumb is you typically double that official unemployment rate to derive at the real unemployment rate. And so, you know, we're looking at very likely over 20% unemployment. So with that, and that's been the case for a couple of months now, and a second wave upon us, maybe the second wave is already happening. It really comes down to who will the voters perceive as I don't want to say necessarily destroyed the economy, because at the end of the day, it's the COVID-19, but who mishandled, who mismanaged it? Will they blame it on Trump and his presidency, or will they blame it on the Democrats, especially those at the state level, and just say, well, the Democrats, look what they did, even if they were the governors who did this, and as well as the members in Congress, the party is not going to get us through this. And so that's what I think is probably going to be the deciding fact, which party is likely to steer us through difficult times and put us on the road to a better economy. But at the same time, and we talk about this in the Intelligencer, or the third edition, trust in national leaders is down, and this is not a partisan thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, it's more intense on the left, but even among those very conservative and conservative, you have pretty large percentages of those who have lost trust in national leaders. So one of the things that we talk about in the report is the prospect for the average American voter to one day come upon the conclusion that, well, if we're just losing trust in our national leaders, we have to believe in somebody. Well, they start to more and more believe in their local leaders, because at the local level, at the end of the day, there's more oversight, there's more transparency. You can have more impact in City Hall in a municipal building than you can in the West Wing, in the House on the Hill, or even federal agencies in Washington, D.C.
So let's take a look at what you said in two pieces. The first piece, you know, is obviously who will they blame? And I generally, the rule when we had rules was that the person at the top gets the credit, deservedly or not deservedly, and gets the blame as well. So, you know, it's all on Trump. And, you know, there are no two steps here where, well, it wasn't his fault and it's the other side. No, it's the guy at the top who's going to get the credit or blame. The other piece of it is so true. And you have written a beautiful issue of the Intelligencer, which I really hope people will click on and read for themselves, about how trust is down. And that leads me to believe that that is where Trump is going to go during this campaign. Boy, you think I'm bad, and you think I've mishandled things with the lack of support and the hostility, and they're going after me. That is the Democrats. Just wait and see. Joe Biden, he'll use the corrupt charge. He'll use the mantra that you hear on Fox News all the time. Oh, I feel sorry for Joe Biden. He's not up to it. He's sleepy Joe. He can't even run a campaign and all that sort of stuff. That's the only way that Trump can conceivably live. Well, if you don't like me, this guy is a whole lot worse, and he's a threat. I think that's a very risky gambit, but we saw risky gambits in 2016, and we know Trump knows how to dominate the news media.
And so really, 2016 came down to ground game.
It did.
And Hillary was, where was Hillary in the key battleground states? Trump was all over the key battleground states. And so I think we're seeing a repeat here where Biden's in his basement. But when it comes down to it, will Biden hit the ground? I would think he probably would, although it depends on his perception of the strategy. That does it look irresponsible to do that come the fall with COVID, you know, likely being a bigger problem? And so Trump, we know, went to Tulsa and had no problem with that, although that was a major disappointment. Trump is going to focus all of his efforts in the key battleground states. And so back to that question of perception over who gets credit and who gets blame, at the end of the day, it really just comes down to enough of his base and the undecided or the independents that think, well, it was the Democrats that made this bad. Trump is going to make it better, or Trump is going to make it worse. The Democrats are going to turn it around. Mm-hmm.
And right now, as we speak, that's not working, which is not to say that it can't work or won't work. But at this moment in July of election year, the president is on the ropes. Very, very much.
And so moving on to another topic, the last 24 hours saw a major bombshell report. That's, of course, the capture of Ghislaine Maxwell, the co-conspirator in the Jeffrey Epstein affair. And although it's too early to really get into this because there are so many, you know, documents that haven't been released to the public, what I'll just say on the matter is there is the potential for this to have a major impact in the election. I keep drawing the analogy to 2016, but if we remember the October surprise in 2016, where some of the WikiLeaks that came out a few days right before the election that some think may have had some of an impact, at least on, you know, maybe a percent or two of the public vote. But in a similar fashion, as names get revealed in this saga, this long played out saga, let's see, where do those names fall? Are some of them on on the Republican side, or some of them on the Democratic side, or some of them on both? So I think that's a key trend to keep watching over the summer and into the election.
Yeah, I do too. This is no small story. And in particular, the little black book, or the actually very large black book that she has, includes a lot of prominent names. And the issue will be whether she sings or not, which she may very well do. She's in deep trouble. You saw the press conference that was held on Thursday when they finally found her as a fugitive in New Hampshire. They trotted out all the big guns. It wasn't just one prosecutor, it was multiple prosecutors, and a lot of important names that go very, very deep. Not only in the United States, but in the West and on the international side. We'll see. And some of those folks are friends of Bill Clinton. Some of those are friends of Donald Trump. This is, if any or all of this is true, this could, at the very least, prove the point that you've just made about distrust in national leaders. And that has even broader implications than the U.S. election. And so we're signing off for another week. Going to call it quits a little early because it's a holiday weekend. But we've covered, I think, some of the major topics that are on people's minds. And we'll be back next Friday. Have a good weekend.
Have a great weekend, everyone. Enjoy your holiday weekend.